Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the show. It's 33 days until the election, 85 days until Christmas, and today is the start of Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Wow. Thanks for all of that anxiety, Shira.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. You're serving up good news.
Hey, that's what I'm here for. But, you know, I like to the election and then at least things that we can spread positivity around. We got to balance it out here.
I agree. And it's already time to start thinking about the holidays. So get to it, people.
Right. All right. Well, coming up on the show, we're going to be talking about how to deal with medical bills if you have those piling up and, you know, how to deal with it in a creative way so you're not breaking your budget, because it's something that a lot of people are dealing with here in this country. Plus, how to talk to people who constantly interrupt you. We have an etiquette expert joining us for that later in the show. Yes, but first let's get into some what's trending this hour. It's coming out that the Trump campaign bought Facebook ads featuring an edited image of Joe Biden with an earpiece leading up to the debate. MSNBC anchor Ayman Mohyeldin confronted Trump's campaign advisor Steve Cortez about it today, as well as their claim that Biden's campaign backed out of an agreement to inspect the Democratic presidential nominee for in-ear devices.
Again, the Biden campaign said this is false and it's ridiculous. I'm giving you a chance now. Do you apologize for misleading millions of people about making that false statement?
I didn't mislead anybody.
So you're still, hold on, let me ask you this.
Give me your proof. Give me your proof that it's false.
No, that's not how it works. You don't make a false statement and say, prove to me that it's not false. I'm asking you a simple statement.
No, I didn't make a false statement. I'm attacking the premise of your question.
Hold on. Your campaign put out a statement saying that there was an agreement that Biden wouldn't agree to an inspection of an earpiece.
Okay, they got into it. That's what I'm talking about.
You know, there was this weird, low-key QAnon conspiracy about that. Like, was Biden wired or something? And it was like, y'all, stop coming up with stuff. And even people, it was like the way Biden's shirt creased at one point. People were like, well, I've worn dress shirts before. My shirt's never creased like that. It's ridiculous what people will come up with to just try to create some mess.
But yeah, there's a reason, is because they also put out all these ads that made people think that. So you see how it feeds into those theories. It doesn't help. Now, the Commission on Presidential Debates is saying it's adding new tools to maintain order to the upcoming debates after, of course, the chaos that we all witnessed. The nonpartisan commission has organized every general election presidential debate since 1988. I mean, they've never seen anything like this, obviously. In a statement, the commission said the first debate, quote, made clear that additional structure should be added to the format of the remaining debates to ensure a more orderly discussion of the issues. They intend to ensure that additional tools are used to maintain order for those remaining debates. It's carefully considering the changes that we'll adopt and will announce those measures shortly. Now let's move on to this. San Diego's professional soccer team walked off the field during a match that it was winning yesterday after an opposing team member allegedly hurled a homophobic slur at an openly gay player. The San Diego Loyal SE, said a member of Phoenix Rising used a homophobic slur directed at Colin Martin. And in response, they decided to walk off the pitch in protest. They said that on Twitter. Now, Martin is openly gay and came out in 2018. At the time, he was said to be the only out gay man in any major professional sport in the U.S. San Diego was winning the match 3-1 when it decided to forfeit, which may also cost the team its playoff hopes, which I feel like they will change that up because this was like an important thing that came up and they had to stand for. Phoenix Rising said in a statement that it is investigating the claim of that homophobic slur being used by one of its players, who denied these allegations. Phoenix Rising stands with the USL in rejecting and punishing any homophobic behavior.
Well, here's the thing. The entire team in support of their teammate wouldn't just walk off the field if it never happened, in my opinion. I just don't believe
that.
Yeah,
for sure. All right, that was some What's Trending this hour. We're moving into top stories in entertainment news. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, let's get into the tea report. We have some devastating news to report on because, you know, Chrissy Teigen and John Legend are mourning an absolute devastating loss. Mm. You know, Chrissy Teigen shared with her fans who've been following her recent pregnancy complications via Instagram. In her latest post, she shared a picture of herself sitting on her hospital bed with tears rolling down her eyes, rolling down her cheeks, having lost their unborn child to those complications. She said this: "We were never able to stop the bleeding and give our baby the fluids he needed. Despite bags and bags of blood transfusions, it just wasn't enough." They also revealed the baby's name. "We, for some reason, I started to call this little guy in my belly Jack. So he will always be Jack to us. Jack worked so hard to be a part of our little family. He will be forever." And, you know, there was a lot of discourse happening. Obviously, she receives tons of love. There's some celebrity reactions from Paris Hilton to Kim Kardashian, who wrote, "We're always here for you. Love you guys." Gabrielle Union even sent her love. But people were really saying, was this too much for her to post about? Like, especially it seemed like it was happening in real time as Chrissy then tweeted saying that she was, leaving the hospital. So devastating without having a child, basically, in those words. And so, what do you think about this year? Do you think it was too much for her to be posting in real time about this?
This is such a sensitive and personal topic. I feel like I don't have the right to say like what she should or shouldn't have done. And right. We talked about this. I'm confused how they documented this so perfectly. Like, was John Legend taking pictures while this was happening? You know, like how are you posting in real time when you're in the hospital going through these procedures?
Yeah,
I think it's important. But then I also am like, do you give yourself time to process this and then post it a bit later, or at least notify people that something's happening, but you're going to be sharing more details soon?
Right.
Like, that's kind of what I wrap my head around that, like how traumatic this whole experience is. And then to be posting immediately or in real time, that's kind of what I'm trying to wrap my head around, I guess.
Yeah, I get it. I think it's a very complicated situation, and I think we're going to dive in a little bit deeper one day on the show.
We're going to talk about the grief that people go through in dealing with this.
Yes, we sure are. We're going to talk about that, and I got more tea report coming up in the next hour.
Now coming up, Biden might be in trouble with the far left after the first presidential debate. We tell you why in 2 minutes with the Washington Post. During the debate Tuesday night, Joe Biden openly went against the Green New Deal liberal climate plan and gave us a reminder of his opposition to Medicare for All. Plus, he said he beat Sanders, too, by a lot.
Paris Accord.
All right, gentlemen.
Wait a minute, Chris. So why didn't he do it for 47 years? You were vice president. Why didn't you get the world? China sends up real dirt into the air. Russia does. India does. They all do. We're supposed to be good. And by the way, he made a couple of statements. The Green New Deal is $100 trillion.
That is not my plan.
That's
Green New Deal.
Well, you want to rebuild every
building. Not my plan.
I want to rebuild every building.
If you knew anything about
it. And on Wednesday, Biden said he hadn't recently spoken to Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the leader of his party's young generation of liberals. So where does Biden stand with the left right now? Back with us is senior editor for The Washington Post, Mark Fisher. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
Yes, it's been quite a week. I'm sure you're busy. Why was it important for him to mention these things at the debate? And why is it something he continues to bring up?
Well, I think, first of all, Vice President Biden is trying to appeal to very disparate aspects of the electorate. So he's got the hardcore Democrats. He's got the Bernie Sanders Democrats, who are not really quite Democrats. You've got the independents and the anti-Trump Republicans. And he's trying to build this coalition. The only way he can build that coalition is to make everyone feel like they're welcome. And so he does not want to be associated publicly with some of the more radical proposals from the left wing of his party. On the other hand, he doesn't want to anger those folks or make them less likely to vote. So it's a very tricky situation he's in. He has a long history as a centrist Democrat. No one is going to be deceived into thinking he's anything other than what he is. But of course, the Republicans are trying to paint him as a radical left Democrat. So he needs to push back against that. And that's the central tension in his campaign.
You talk about his personal appeal, but wouldn't it feels like it would fit him to really talk about the unity that he's trying to create with this task force, right? Where he could say, yeah, I am a centrist, but I am willing as the president of the United States to listen to everyone. Wouldn't that be a good strategy as well?
I think it's a great strategy. I think that's what they're trying to do. I think you're seeing that in a lot of their advertising, that kind of openness. And look, the Democratic Party has shifted to the left in recent years. And Biden is on board with that, and he acknowledges that. And so you see him, as Shira mentioned, you see him with Bernie Sanders. You see him with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So he's trying to do that and maintain relationships with Elizabeth Warren and people like that, even as he's saying to all of these former Democrats who voted for Trump last time, you're welcome back in this party. And Trump is trying to really hold him to this. And you saw in the debate, Trump is saying, are you for law and order or not? And it's very hard for a Joe Biden, who's been in Washington for decades, to say, he's not going to say I'm against the police. He's not going to say I'm against law and order. So he doesn't want to be put in that position. And that's why you saw him saying again and again, I'm not going to talk about packing the court. I'm not going to talk about these things that would make me look more radical than I am.
Again, we're talking to senior editor for The Washington Post, Mark Fisher, about how Biden is creating separations between him and the rest of the Democrats, the far left, the Sanders, the AOCs. In doing that, what you just mentioned on debate night, I mean, I saw the strategy, but do you think it maybe came off of as he was just trying to escape the answer?
It's kind of astonishing that neither Joe Biden nor Kamala Harris has come up with a reasonable way of saying,
yes,
I'm not going to pack the court, without upsetting the left and without upsetting the right. It's not that hard. And yet they both seem tongue-tied on this question. And so I think that tongue-tied nature is showing their discomfort. They, you know, the old way you won elections in this country was to move to the center and create a big tent and say everyone's welcome. And now, is that we have a divided country and people have moved off to the fringes, that old message feels stale and sounds inauthentic. And so they're in a tough position. No one has come up with a way to do what Barack Obama and Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter did, which was to drive a message toward the center, bring everyone together, and then after you're elected, create a more liberal kind of agenda.
It's a little bit more difficult, though, especially when you're talking about this conversation about law and order. And I think he disappointed a lot of, you know, the young people of color, if you're really thinking about it, like, especially from what I'm seeing online, there's always been a lack of enthusiasm and there's been this kind of mobilization gap with young people. Is him not being firm about kind of even just bringing a definition, a clear definition of what defund the police means? He could have said that on debate night, being like, this is what I mean. Like, I represent law and order and I'm okay with that, but this is where we want to go with it. Is there any room for him to actually do something like that and not lose the support of young people of color?
I think in a less frenzied, less hysterical kind of setting, he is good at getting that message across. He clearly was not good at getting it across in that debate where he was under fire like that. So in all, I think this is someone who, you know, he's of an age and of a period where he's not going to be that nimble in a debate. And so it's maybe asking too much of him. On the other hand, he wants to present himself as the reasonable, rational choice, the intelligent choice. And you know, certainly in contrast to the president's tactics, he looked that way. But will that be enough to appeal? Look, he's never going to be Barack Obama. He's not going to have that kind of way of touching people, but he is a very talented politician. And if he were out there on the streets the way it would be in a non-COVID time and doing rallies and doing all that, you'd see that side of Joe Biden much better than you're seeing it right
now. Again, that's Mark Fisher, a senior editor for The Washington Post. Thanks so much.
Good to be with you.
Now, coming up, another big topic following the election or the debates has been the far-right group, the Proud Boys. We break down who and what they are and what they want to achieve in 2 minutes. We've heard the soundbite over and over again from Tuesday's presidential debate, Trump not condemning white supremacy and instead giving a shout out to the Proud Boys.
Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared to specifically
that,
do it?
Well, I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
right wing. Who would you like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right wing.
Proud Boys. Stand back and stand by, but I'll tell you what, somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because
now, started by a co-founder of Vice magazine, the Proud Boys describe themselves as a Western chauvinist men's club that believe in ending welfare, closing borders, and adhering to traditional gender roles. So why would Trump reference them, even though he has since said, by the way, he doesn't know who they are? Well, back with us is Brian Dunning, host of the Skeptoid podcast. Thanks again for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I give a little bit of a background here, and I was surprised that it was from the co-founder of Vice magazine. Yikes. How did this group start and what do they represent today?
So if I can give a little bit of a long answer to that, to understand the Proud Boys, who and why they exist, you have to understand sort of Trump populism. You know, we start with recognize that traditional political groups like Democrats and Republicans, they share this core principle of trying to make our lives better, trying to make the country better. Obviously, they disagree on how to do that, but they share that same core principle. Now, populists, particularly Trump populists, are the group who's completely abandoned those principles. So, and if I can give an example, one conservative value that we hear about a lot is personal accountability, right? Personal responsibility. So populism follows the opposite of that, which is blaming everyone else for all of your problems. You're fighting back against everyone else. And this is why Trump is always all about blaming other groups, the Mexicans, the Chinese, the Democrats, whoever it is. He unifies the populist base by validating their desire to have other people punished for whatever it is that they're dissatisfied about in their own lives. So given this climate, it's kind of inevitable that a group like the Proud Boys would have arisen. You know, now that they're given license from on high to literally to fight back.
All right. Brian Dunning again joins us, host of the Skeptoid podcast, as we talk about the background behind the Proud Boys. So why would Trump mention them on stage, stand back and stand by? And are they linked to white supremacy?
Yeah, I mean they don't like to openly identify as racist or bigot or sexist or all of these things that they clearly are associated with. So instead they use that term that you mentioned, this kind of strange term, Western chauvinist, whatever the heck that is, defending Western male values. I guess they feel that sounds warmer and fuzzier
patriarchy
than yeah. It sounds better than white nationalists.
Yeah.
Clearly,
that makes
well, it's all in the branding, right? It really reminds me of, like, if you watch Mrs. America, Phyllis Schlafly, she was okay with kind of working with people who had ties with, like, the KKK if they just didn't blatantly say that they were a part of the KKK, right? It's all this marketing. Is that something that we're seeing kind of Donald Trump also do, like taking advantage of the somewhat unfortunate power that these groups have?
I think you hit the nail exactly on the head. Yeah. By branding it with this, you know, this less offensive or just at least vague term, nobody can complain. Hey, they just advocated racism. They didn't. We advocated Western chauvinism, whatever that is. But clearly, the people who are all part of these movements and part of these groups, they know exactly what they're about. And they're not put off by that branding at all.
Yeah. And Brian, what do you think about the fact that Huffington Post, I guess, got these notes or something from this group that did say that they wanted to create war and get attention and describe something like a bloodbath? Like, I feel like that's very worrisome. And when you see something like that being revealed, you would say that's a threat. That is a terrorist organization.
Clearly. I'm going to hope that we've got a small number of very vocal people, even within the Proud Boys, from whom that kind of rhetoric is coming, and that the majority of them are, I hate to say ordinary Americans, because that's not even close to true. But I like to think that most of the Proud Boys are like most people in general, and that they're not actually going to go out and do violence. We can all hold extremist views, but we can also govern them to some degree.
For the sake of it being, Brian, for us to kind of, obviously, Antifa is something that Trump has talked about. I feel like we've kind of debunked it with you. But when it comes into being conflated with Proud Boys, can you tell us the stark differences of like what we should be looking at when it comes to, obviously, what people are saying Antifa is versus what people are saying and what we're discussing about Proud Boy? I think that kind of differencing and that connection and difference needs to be put out there.
So in my experience, the ability to actually go out into the world and commit violence is a special kind of crazy. There's something going on in your brain. And I don't think it makes much difference whether you're identifying as Antifa or a Proud Boy. Mm. There's something wrong with you if you're going out and doing those things. And those people do not represent the vast majority of the protesters. Certainly the Black Lives Matter protest has nothing at all to do with going out and doing violence. So I think that to the degree that there are Antifa people who identify as that, going out and breaking windows and doing violence, that's no different from groups that associate more with the Proud Boys or with populism. They are real, they are out there, but I don't think you want to blame any larger movement on either side for those kind of actions.
All right. Well, Brian Denning, thanks again for joining us. Brian is the host of the Skeptoid podcast. Check it out. It's a great podcast.
Thank you. Just saying.
All right. Coming up, can the beauty industry persuade people to vote for Biden? We discuss that next in 2 minutes. First Lady Melania Trump released a video today promoting his efforts to prevent substance abuse.
Each October, we observe National Substance Abuse Prevention Month. In my time as First Lady, I have worked to raise awareness about the risks and dangers of drug use among our youth through my Be Best initiative. The goal of Be Best is to encourage children to practice healthy habits in their daily lives.
Now, there are so many things I have to say about this video and Ryan too, but first, before we get into that, this announcement comes on the heels of Tuesday's debate when Trump mocked Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, for having a drug addiction.
The people left behind were heroes.
Really?
And I resent.
Are you talking
like
about Hunter?
Hell.
Are you talking about
I'm
Hunter?
I'm talking about my son, Bo Biden. You're talking about
Bo. I don't know Bo. I know Hunter.
Yeah,
Hunter,
you know,
got thrown, Hunter got thrown out of the military. He was thrown out, dishonorably discharged.
That's not true. He wasn't dishonorably.
Cocaine use. And he didn't have a job until you became vice president. Once you
None
became
of that
vice
is
president,
true.
He made a fortune in Ukraine, in China, in Moscow,
that is simply
and various
not
other places.
True.
I mean, dropping this video, considering what was brought up earlier this week, it was in such bad taste. And I feel like it really showed who Biden was in terms of how he reacted and responded to that, an issue that many Americans deal with.
You know, I completely agree, Shira, because it was one of those moments, and this is actually the most, when I was watching the debates live, this was the moment Joe Biden had that really struck a chord with me, him looking into the camera, telling the American people that, guess what, everyone goes through stuff, but I am still proud of my son. And that just honestly now gives me chills thinking about it. It made me kind of emotional,
because
of the passion, right? And to know that Melania Trump's video that was scheduled to come out, knowing that her husband is doing what he's doing, it's so hypocritical. It makes no sense. And it honestly describes perfectly how this administration is.
Yeah, hypocritical. Exactly. And let's also talk about the actual visuals of the video. She's like staring at the camera from one side as if something happened to the other side of her face. Like she's pulling a Mariah Carey or something. It's so robotic. I don't get, for the amount of money that these people have access to, get a good producing team to properly produce a video to make it seem comfortable and accessible and conversational. She's like a fembot.
Here's the thing. No matter what this administration does, there's no way that you can fake being comfortable or warm, you know? I think
that's true.
Seen out of all of her little things that she's tried to do, from the cyberbullying to now be drug-free, that it has not, it's all essentially failed, because guess what? You need to lead by example, sweetheart, and have the people around you lead by example. If they can't do that, then it's negating what you're saying in this video. And it's just, it's sad to continue to see stuff like that, because I think the messaging is obviously good when you're like, oh.
And they have good intentions.
Yeah.
But like, but the execution is just the worst. Yeah, for real.
It's not reading the room. It's not reading the room and talking about the elephant sitting his big ass right in the middle of the room. And you're just like, oh, no big deal. I'm not going to talk about that. And yes, I'll talk about the elephant in that.
And if you're talking about marketing, and these people are, you know, smart at marketing, as we know, they know how to get attention. This just doesn't bring the attention to the actual thing they want people to talk about. It's a distraction. So all we're doing is talking about, you know, the presentation of it versus the issue at hand. And let's just, as we wrap this up, talk about that issue because it is important. Tens of millions of Americans suffer from substance abuse and addiction. 1 in 10 Americans struggle with drug abuse at some point in their lives. So that's what we're fighting right now. It is the biggest killer when it comes to substance abuse, is the stigma associated with it. And that's something we talk about here on Let's Go There. So let's wrap our heads around that as we move towards a solution. Hey, how about that? All right, now coming up, Biden is launching a new campaign aimed at securing Asian American votes. That's next in What's Trending This Hour. Now coming up, how to deal with unexpected medical expenses and creating a plan to pay them off, plus how to deal with someone who interrupts you all the time. And of course, we were inspired by what happened during the debate between Trump and Biden. A lot to deal with. We just mentioned how to deal a bunch.
I mean, we're
just realized that.
We're basically the show to help you get through life. That's really what it is. But yeah, I'm super excited to have that conversation because there is something to be said about the lack of etiquette that we saw and how we move forward from that. Is this something that we just have to get used to? Who knows? But we'll find out later in the show.
Definitely. All right, let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. After 23 years at Fox News, Shepard Smith is now at CNBC and debuted his new program, The News with Shepard Smith, by holding President Donald Trump accountable for his behavior at the presidential debate.
The News from CNBC. It's great to be back. So much has changed since I took a break. Foremost, racial injustice and social unrest have escalated, and the worldwide pandemic has rocked us. It's altered our lives, stressed our families, ravaged our communities, killed our loved ones, and changed the course of human events. Misinformation, disinformation impede our ability to recover. Income inequality makes recovery for some much harder. Here each night, we'll cover these issues through journalists and experts, not opinions and pundits. As we approach the vote, our nation is divided. Two sides, fears and dreams deserve thoughtful, honest reporting without favor or fear. Our mission is to deliver the facts in context and with perspective.
Now, this is really interesting. I'm actually really impressed by Shepard Smith. You know, he was at Fox News for so long. There was a journey there because he hadn't come out yet. And I'm happy he held Trump accountable there. And he continues to do some interesting stuff in the business of news because he is very talented.
I have no clue who this guy is. You said
Shepard
come out.
Smith?
Yeah.
And he's gay.
Oh, cute. I had no clue.
He was like the only person at Fox News. Well, one, it seemed to be out in that way. And then also to really denounce his colleagues, including
Chris Wallace.
No, the other one.
No, he literally denounced Chris Wallace as well. He said that actually yesterday he's on record saying that Chris Wallace is not a partisan guy. I just looked it up.
What about the other one that you don't like?
Tucker Carlson.
Tucker Carlson. Don't know why that was so hard to remember. Maybe we've been cutting him out of our memory, which makes sense.
No, but I had no clue. But here's the thing. You got to give me some grace and space here because, to be honest, before this show, I wasn't always watching the news outlets every five seconds, right? I feel like I have really grown so much because I'm so politically engaged now and there's so much that I have an opinion on. And so there's so many new people that I'm finding out about and he's one of them. But I'm very happy about his journey from what it seems like.
Yeah. And you know why I know some of this stuff about Fox News. I'm not proud of it, but I was never hired by them, but they used to bring me on as a guest a lot way back when, probably like over 10 years ago as an entertainment reporter. And so I was on all those shows talking about entertainment news.
I got choked up a little bit because I'm just like, why do you have to clarify that? Who cares? It was a job. You got a check for it.
No, I didn't. No, they weren't paying me.
Oh, well, that's embarrassing. Maybe you shouldn't say that live.
I'm just saying, I said that. If anything, they didn't pay me. I wasn't taking their money. I had a friend who worked there. And of course, we weren't on the politics side. And it wasn't as heated as it is now. Like, now would be different. I wouldn't have said yes to being on as much. It wasn't as where it is right now and as divisive. even though it did have the background. Like, I would talk to them about how I'm Canadian and progressive, and that's probably why they didn't hire me. Let's move on. A contractor who works on Google's G Suite for Higher Education, Google for Education team, is saying Google discriminated and retaliated against her after she suffered a knee injury in 2019 by removing her from team meetings. And now this whole complaint is out. It came out on Motherboard, the website. The allegations follow many reports about Google's treatment of its temps, vendors, and contractors. They're known as TBCs, second tier of workers, that makes up at least half of Google's workforce. TBCs often do not receive perks, benefits, or full-time employment at Google, such as paid time off, high salaries, invitation to company-wide all-hands meetings. They're basically like the bastard child of Google, it seems. So this two-tier workforce has sparked some of the recent worker-led activism and backlash against Google. In 2018, they actually published a letter to the CEO saying the system at Google was perpetuating institutionalized sexism, racism, and discrimination at the company. So a lot happening at Google, and actually they tried to unionize in 2019, but there hasn't been any results to that. Now, Biden is coming together with the Asian community to reach Asian Americans in battleground states. Asian American members of Congress are teaming up with Biden's campaign for an initiative to reach out to Asian American and Pacific Islander voters. They call them AAPI. The lawmakers will join the official AAPIs for Biden group on a virtual bus tour with the plan to make roughly 10 stops, including many of those states, over the course of 2 weeks. Their aim is to connect with the AAPI electorate in those areas. Now, Representative Grace Meng is joining the tour. They said the goal is to drive voter registration, educate voters, pull more people into their organizing universe. And it's called AAPI's Assemble Virtual Bus Tour with Aspire PAC. So they're kicking off Friday in Milwaukee with additional stops announced in the coming days. So look out for that. And that was what's trending this hour. Let's move into some top stories in pop culture. What's the tea, Ryan?
All right, I got some good news to deliver. You know, we call this the T Report, the pop culture moments that are trending as of right now. And Nicki Minaj gave birth to her first child here in Los Angeles. She's a new mom. Rep for Minaj did not immediately return TMZ's request for comment, but obviously the news broke. Basically, they welcomed her and her husband welcomed their first child. There's been no information released on the infant's gender or name. Super excited to find out more. But coming up next hour, we got to talk about an update from yesterday. Kris Jenner is speaking out about that lawsuit about sexual harassment claims. So, honey, more T Report coming up next hour. And that's it. I'm ready. I'm done spilling.
Now coming up, we tell you how to handle unexpected medical expenses that you can't afford. We know a lot of people are out there. That might be you. That's in 2 minutes. Medical debt is common, especially in America, where a 2018 study found the average hospital stay was over $5,000 per day. But what do you do when you get hit with a medical bill that you can't pay back? Joining us right now is Michael Micheletti, California-based finance expert with Freedom Financial Network. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, everybody.
I mean, the medical issue here in America and insurance is just wild. I'm Canadian, so it blows me away how the country can't seem to figure it out. That said, what happens when you can't afford a medical bill that you get?
Well, I think there's two sort of paths when it comes to medical debt specifically, right? Moving from a medical expense and a bill debt, right? And I think for everyday people, they go to the doctor, they get a bill, and you have ability to pay it or you don't. And how you navigate that sort of conundrum is where you end up having a problem. So I think how we evaluate it at Freedom is really there's two paths way that medical debt manifests itself. One is you get that medical bill and you don't have ability to pay out of savings or a health savings account or a flexible saving account, and then you go put it on your credit card. Now you've moved bill to a high interest, not a good idea. Then there's a second path where you just don't have ability to pay at all, where that bill comes to you and then the medical bill collectors come for you. And so those bills are handled a little slightly differently. You have ability to negotiate those bills, negotiate them down with the healthcare provider, the healthcare system, your doctor, the nurse, whoever that's coming from. There are ways to sort of negotiate those debts down. But there's two real separate debt issues in America when it comes to medical expenses.
You know, when we're talking about this, I can't help but think about the Affordable Care Act and how important is it to have medical insurance and how effective is ACA, the Affordable Care Act?
Good question, Ryan. I think it's a lot of people think about health coverage as in a complete solution, meaning I go to the doctor, I have coverage, and that equals 100% of costs being taken care of. That is not the reality, right? The reality is, depending on the kind of insurance you have, you could still be on the hook for 5, 10, 15, 20%, sometimes up to 30% of the procedure, the visit, whatever that is. So that means for everyday people like you and me, we have to plan for those unexpected expenses, right? And part of ACA and part of what the government and sometimes your employer puts together for you are a variety of ways to plan effectively, namely with two sort of tax shelter vehicles. One is a flexible spending account and another is a health savings account. And those are two really powerful tools that everybody should be leveraging because it really helps you in a couple of ways, really. One, it really secures your healthcare moving forward, but it also helps you in the short term as well. It lowers your tax liability, actually what you owe the IRS and what you owe the government, because the money that goes into those two accounts come from pre-tax contributions.
Yeah, and again, we're talking to Michael Micheletti, California-based finance expert with Freedom Financial Network, about paying back your medical bills and how to do it when you can't afford it. And I think a lot of people are in this position. There are different options out there, and we've kind of talked about this. Pay program, employer-backed savings accounts, FSA, HSA. Mm-hmm. Can we go through those right now?
Sure, I think I can certainly give you a high level of what people need to be a lookout.
Break it down for us like we're in kindergarten, though.
Yeah. So first thing first, we're going to talk about open enrollment. This is the most important sort of two words right now in the U.S. For most of us, if you're employed, and even if you're not employed, the open enrollment period will start to open up for you at your employer or even at the ACA or state level for insurance. Very important for every single person, no matter where you think you're at in your healthcare, that you pay attention to what you select this year. Because, Ryan, as you mentioned earlier, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. We're in the middle of a recession running concurrently. So these kinds of decisions you have to make today and through October and November really are going to impact everything all of 2021. So you have to be very strategic about how you make those plans. So, at the risk of getting too sort of healthcare-y on this, you have to look at your insurance through a couple of different lenses, right? Is how much can you pay at the sort of biweekly or monthly level that's comfortable for your budget? And look at this as not ability to pay today, but if something was to happen, right? Your ability to pay into your premiums, your insurance premiums. That's the first thing. The second thing is, once you make that determination of what's the best coverage for you, your family, et cetera, how do I get out in front of something? Can I put an extra $25 in a health savings account or a flexible spending account, those two to help keep you ahead of the game when something does happen? Because you know what? It will.
And you don't pay taxes on that, right? When you put it into those accounts?
No. So the money, and this is the beauty of those two particular, which I said, tax sheltered sort of accounts, is it comes out of your paycheck before taxes are taken out of it. So it actually lowers the amount of money that you're actually going to have to pay the government on the backside.
Wow. So much good information. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yep.
Thank you for having me.
Again, that was Michael Micheletti from Freedom Financial Network. Now coming up, Biden, listen up. We find out how to talk to someone who is a constant interrupter next in 2 minutes. President Trump's apparent strategy at the first presidential debate Tuesday night, interrupt as much as possible. And now this brings up the question, how do you argue with a constant interrupter? And if you're the interrupter, how do you stop interrupting? Joining us right now is Jody R.R. Smith, president of Manor Smith. Very official. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I mean, this is a really interesting topic. It's unfortunate that we're seeing this play out with our president on a national / international stage. But what was your take when you saw this happening?
Oh, my goodness. There was a lot going on. But the overarching theme that I could not stop thinking about was that when I teach, what I'm teaching is that we generalize competence based on observable behaviors. Mm. And the things that I was seeing on the screen were not things that were telling me that somebody was competent and ready to do the job that they really, a debate is part of a job interview, what they were being interviewed to do. And when you see people acting like that, you have to be able to extrapolate. If this is the way they're acting here, what is that going to mean when they meet with heads of state? Because that is part of the job.
Well, Ms. Jody, I just know one thing's for sure. I am never going to be running for president because it would have been it would have been a mess if I was on that stage. How do you think Joe Biden handled himself and was a clear example on how to kind of handle people who are basically like the worst, like Trump?
So I'm going to answer this from an etiquette perspective and please. Not a political perspective.
Yes, yes. Please, please.
Which is that Biden really had very few options. Mm-hmm. If this was in real life and I was having an argument with somebody or I was debating with someone or I was trying to express an idea to somebody who kept interrupting me, I could walk out of the room and say, I'm done here. And he didn't really have that as an option. So he did the best considering the circumstance. To interrupt the other person usually doesn't help. Using a little bit of humor, you want to stay away from sarcasm because that doesn't always translate in a debate, but a little bit of humor and then talking to the audience and not to the debate partner. Because if the debate partner is not having a conversation, then you just stop talking to them.
Yeah, that's what he did. Really interesting. So there was a strategy behind that. He probably was coached on that. Jody Smith joins us right now, president of Manor Smith, as we talk about how to talk to people who constantly interrupt and why they do it. I also feel like people do that when they're trying to prove their competence, right? They're not actually confident. They think by doing this, they'll appear competent, like they know what they're doing.
Well, it's like what your mother or grandmother or whoever your parental unit was growing up always told you, when somebody says, trust me, you shouldn't. And if somebody is constantly interrupting in order to feel or appear more important, they're not. Interrupting is not a position of strength. It's a bullying position, but bullies do that because they're insecure, mm-hmm. not because they feel like they feel good about what they're doing.
But is there a way to kind of have like this effective dialogue in a sense? Because it feels like, was he supposed to kind of like talk him off the ledge of being like, I know you have a lot to say here, but how do you combat that? Because when you're in the heat of the moment, it seems like everything you know just goes out the window.
It is. It's really easy for us to analyze it after the fact and really hard to be somebody in the moment.
Yeah.
So doing things like saying, it's my turn now, you'll have a turn in a second, or I don't know what's going on over there, but let me tell you what I want to do.
What, in the 3-year-old? This is
I know,
parenting.
I was going to say, it's like what you do with kids.
It's absolutely parenting. And in fact, one of the things that we're talking about is how to prevent an interrupter in your own life. And if you have to have a conversation, number one, getting agreement that you're having the conversation. Because if I'm in the middle of doing 15 things and I'm at deadline and Ryan wants to tell me something really important, he's trying to talk to me and I'm trying to hurry him up. I'm trying to get him to finish his thought. Mm-hmm. I might be interrupting him. Instead, if Ryan comes over and says, Jody, I need to talk to you. It's going to take about 20 minutes. I'm going to need your undivided attention. When can you talk to me? And I can look in my files and say, okay, I can talk to you at 7 o'clock tonight and give you my undivided attention. So there's different strategies that we can use. And when the kids are little, I mean, what we saw was really some toddler behavior. When the kids are little, we used to have a tattle elephant. And the person who was holding the tattle elephant, a little soft, squishy elephant, they were the one that was allowed to talk. And if you weren't holding the tattle elephant, you weren't allowed to talk. So there are different strategies that you can use with the people in your own personal life.
Also, Jody, just as we wrap things up, I think compassionate listening is really important as a general tool, but I guess around etiquette of how we treat each other and how we live with one another in this world. Do you have any tips for compassionate listening?
Yes. So when somebody comes to talk to you about something, even if it's something that you find very upsetting, ask questions.
curiosity.
Ask questions. Instead of responding, ask further, tell me more about that. We see that when people give us news that is shocking to us, we immediately try to respond. People could have been sitting with this information and they've processed it, but I haven't had a chance to process. So I need to ask, tell me what makes you say that. Tell me what you were hoping would happen. What do you think we should do next together? And by asking questions, instead of being in an adversarial debate, I've now come to your side to help you to help understand what you're saying better, and then we can move forward together.
Okay, Jody, we're going to stop you there. I'm not interrupting you because when we get back, I want to talk about what Joe Biden should be doing at the next debate. That's in 2 minutes. We've been talking about how to deal with people who interrupt you all the time. Of course, we were inspired by the mess that happened at the presidential debate on Tuesday night.
Can I answer?
He doesn't want to let me answer because he knows I have the truth. His position has been totally, thoroughly discredited.
By who? In
Ukraine.
The media.
By everybody. Well, by the,
by the media,
by our allies, by the World Bank. By everyone. Has discredited. Matter of fact, even the people who testified under oath.
So let me ask you this.
Go ahead, Mister. I'm listening to you.
You got $3.5 million from Moscow.
He testified under oath in his administration, said, I did my job and I did it very well.
And back with us is Jody Smith, president of Mannersmith. So, Jody, what should Joe Biden be doing so this doesn't happen again for the next debate?
Or anyone that's in this position.
Well, so yeah, but you can't get off stage.
Yeah, so debating on national TV, the bottom line, a prerequisite has to be a mute button. And I would say two things. A mute button that the moderator can mute, and that anytime I'm interrupted, my clock goes back to zero and I get my full time. So if I have 2 minutes and I'm at 1 minute and 58 seconds and the other person interrupts me, I now get a full 2 minutes again. Ooh. So that you have both a positive for me and a negative for the other person. And that will discourage them from interrupting along the way.
Okay, I do have one more thing.
What if
people don't even realize they're the interrupter? What if they have no awareness of that? How do you kind of bring that to them?
So if this is a spouse or a partner or a roommate, what I'm going to do is start telling them. So I'm in the middle of saying something and you interrupt me. I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to wait until you stop talking and I'm not going to talk anymore until you say Jody. And then I'm going to talk. And if it happens over and over again, I'll actually sit you down. Actually, I won't sit you down. I usually like to do this sort of thing on a walk. It's a big muscle activity talk. So we're walking side by side. I'll say, Ryan, you remember when we were talking this morning about what we should have for breakfast? And every time I said something, you interrupted me and you'd say, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I'll say, well, I said this and you said that. So I'm going to talk about not you always interrupt me, a very specific and recent situation. And then I'll say, this upsets me because you're interrupting. What can we do? And then as we walk, we can talk about what we can do. And knowing that it takes a little while to modify behaviors, but we'll figure it out together.
Oh my God, I love this. It went from a debate to life, right?
I'm not gonna lie to you though. I'm not gonna lie to you. Growing up in a Black family, this is not something I would have literally talked about like this, like, oh, this is white people stuff. But this is very valuable information, people. I love this. This is incredible, Miss Jody.
Well, thank you.
And Jody, I have to admit, I've had, and Ryan knows this, I definitely get excited and I've found myself interrupting and I personally have had to work on it. And literally my way I do it is as someone's talking, instead of getting excited, being like, oh, well, this is what I think, or like, this is my advice for you. I literally tell myself compassionate listening in my head as they're talking, just to like remind
myself
that that's where I'm at.
Shira's a screamer. She'll
okay,
over.
Right? I get very excited. Like Elaine on Seinfeld. All right. Jody Smith, again, president of Mannersmith. Thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Next, Trump might actually be beating Biden in something. We look at what that statistic is coming up and what's trending this hour. We've got more show coming for you, including the story of someone who's being called the Milwaukee Mario. I'll leave it there because it's a really fun story that's coming for you later in the show on the Yaz Queen of the Day. Let's get into some what's trending this hour. Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany was asked about whether President Trump denounces white supremacists. And this is what she had to say.
Yesterday by the president himself, the day before by the president himself on the debate stage, the president was asked this. He said, sure, three times. Yesterday, he was point blank asked, do you denounce white supremacy? And he said, I've always denounced any form of that. I can go back and read for you in August 2019, in one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. In August of 2017, racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups. I have an entire list of these quotes that I can go through with you. He has condemned white supremacy more than any president in modern history.
Just, yeah, he has condemned white supremacy more than any other president because we've had to question his support of it because of his actions over and over and over again.
Who is? I don't think he's ever condemned white supremacy, to be quite honest. That's a lie. At the jump, he's always ignored it or been able to divert from it, like we've seen. But more recently, his more blatant attack has been to tell white supremacists to stand back and stand by. So yeah, everyone's lying here. There's no such, he has never denounced white supremacy.
Well, also today, McEnany clarified that Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett is not an Oxford University Rhodes Scholar after a reporter pointed out that she had made the mistake earlier in the press briefing.
I first wanted to clean up something from your opening. You said Judge Barrett was a Rhodes Scholar. I'm not sure that that's true.
That's what I have written
she
here.
She attended Rhodes College.
Attended Rhodes College. So my bad.
Very different thing. Yes. All right.
Barrett received her bachelor's degree from Rhodes College in Tennessee. Prominent recipients of the Rhodes Scholarship, known as being a Rhodes Scholar, which allows students to complete postgraduate study at the University of Oxford, include Bill Clinton and Rachel Maddow.
Oh, so that's just like a simple twist of the words by accident,
yeah,
I guess.
But it's a video that's been shared everywhere.
Because,
you know, it's a flub. It is.
I get it.
Now, in the last few weeks, Joe Biden has led President Trump by a fairly consistent 8-point average in national polls and has maintained leads in more than enough battleground states to win the Electoral College, including Arizona, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. All states Trump won in 2016. But listen up, there are signs that Trump is gaining traction when it comes to registering new voters in those key states. The Trump campaign has boasted that it knocks on more than 1 million doors a week, a claim that's actually impossible to verify. In contrast, the Biden campaign has ditched that on the ground efforts for virtual outreach because of COVID-19 concerns. Even though academic research has concluded door-to-door canvassing is the most consistently effective and efficient method of voter mobilization.
But not in the middle of COVID. I just don't understand
that.
But
it's
also
concerning. It is concerning.
Also, like, who is he? Santa Claus? Is he sneaking down people's chimneys, getting registrations? It's just, it's weird. I don't like it.
He has a very intense on-the-ground effort, and it seems to be possibly working. Now, Chris Cuomo and Ted Cruz sparred off today on CNN when discussing the politicization of COVID-19, and it got messy like the debate.
You guys
not
are
the
really
Cuomos,
tough.
I'm talking about the president. My brother's not the president. I'm talking about the president, the one who called you a liar, the one who said your wife was ugly. That guy, you know, the guy now who you won't say anything about.
I recognize that you like it. You actually wonder why you don't have a lot of Republicans that want to come on your show.
I have more than any other show.
And yell at.
I mean, I don't know how far we got with this conversation, but a lot of people know we're making fun of it and saying Chris Cuomo gave Ted Cruz what he deserved.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the reason why this is such a big moment, because Ted Cruz has been on a press tour trying to convince people that, you know, that Trump is the person to be. And then he's standing up for Amy Coney Barrett. He was on The View as well this week. And I really dislike the guy. He's the worst.
Well, that was somewhat trending this hour. More stories right now in the Tea Report. What's going on, Ryan?
Okay, so y'all know I got the Tea Report, those pop culture moments that are trending right now. And Kris Jenner, yesterday we talked about how she is being accused of a sexual harassment and being sued by her former security guard. So Kris Jenner and Kourtney Kardashian are intensely denying the completely false claims made by that former security guard, Mark McWilliams. In this statement says his absurd allegations are clearly fabricated and are contrary to easily confirmed facts. Kris never acted inappropriately toward him. The security company stopped assigning McWilliams to work there after the guard was repeatedly caught sleeping in his car on the job. And if you don't remember, he was saying that Kourtney and Kris have touched him inappropriately and they said something about it. He said something about it. He tried to go to HR about it. They didn't do anything. And Kris Jenner and Kourtney started treating him terribly. And that's why this lawsuit is happening behind Kris Jenner. She ain't having it.
All right. Well, that makes sense.
You know, we'll see as this story develops. We got more stories coming up. Charlie Carver. Now, he's one of the 9 out of gay or bisexual stars on Netflix's new show, The Boys in the Band. Charlie Carver says that a gay colleague once slapped his face at an Emmy party as a part of a lesson to not to appear too gay at an entertainment industry event. The exchange was a huge catalyst for Carver coming out a while later. He said this, I was told that I needed to get it under control around people in the business. Whoa. Later that evening, when Carver asked his colleague what he meant by that statement, the man slapped him. He said it wasn't playful, but intentional, pointed and meant to be instructive. A slap. I told him that if he ever touched me again, I would name him. That was the moment when I said to myself, I can't do this. I cannot police myself in that way. And Charlie came out a few months later in January of 2016 on Instagram. Wow, this is happening. And I honestly can't wait to see this show, because the one thing Ryan Murphy's going to do is going to write a show about some white gays. And honey, I'm sign me up. That is your T report. And I got nothing else for you.
Okay, now many of us are searching for that will to return to working out. Find out how you can get into the mental state to get back in shape. We've got Casey Johnston, the Director of Health and Lifestyle Coverage at Vice, joining us for that next in 2 minutes. Many people put their fitness plans on hold during the pandemic. Many have been inspired to pick fitness up, but it can be challenging starting back over. And here to discuss how to make it all okay is Casey Johnston, writer for Vice. And she's also known as the Swole Woman on Instagram. Thanks for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this can be difficult because I find either there's people who dove into their fitness routine during this time or had a hard time getting into it. I guess, what do you say to people who have been, taking that break and they start feeling bad about it?
Right. I mean, it can be so hard to restart something when you know you've been like atrophying. And if you go to the gym or start working out again, you're going to find out exactly how weak you've gotten in this time. And it can be really... it can really undermine your confidence in this whole endeavor. But the advice that I give people is that there's so much more you can get out of working out and so much more you can focus on than sort of just being the strongest and most in shape that you can possibly be. You can work on your form. You can work on how you take care of yourself outside of the gym in order to make sure your gym sessions go well. It's just, getting back to the gym is the time to focus on those things and not stressing yourself out about how out of shape you might be.
I mean, I can only think about the top of this quarantine where folks were telling everyone to be better. You should be better than you were coming out of the quarantine, the pressure of all of that. What about the folks who even may feel bad about like not doing maybe enough that they could have done?
Right. Know? I mean, I wrote a column a few months ago that was titled, "No One Should Worry About Working Out Right Now." Mm-hmm. And I still feel that that's the case. I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said for what physical activity can sort of do for your mental state. It's good for everybody to like get outside a little bit or go for a walk or what have you, but it's definitely not the time to stress yourself out about accomplishing anything. It's like our society is in ruins, and that's a very stressful thing to be going through for everybody. You don't need to add more stress to yourself by being like, just because I'm working from home, this is going to be the most productive time of my entire life.
Did you feel pressure as being kind of labeled the swole woman? Like, did you feel pressure during this time?
I would say that I put some pressure on myself to sort of keep up my level of normal, but I tried to really, I mean, I have a lot of experience with putting too much pressure on myself and a lot of therapy with figuring out that impulse and trying to manage it a little bit better. So I did feel those feelings, but I think that I really tried to be nice to myself more so than I did put pressure on myself.
Definitely. Again, you're listening to Casey Johnson, writer for Vice. She's also known as a swole woman on Instagram. And yeah, I think it's important to break a sweat, but like you, to know why you're doing something. Are you doing it obviously for the goal? Are you doing it to lose weight? Are you doing it to shame because you're shaming yourself because you don't feel happy in your body? I think it's important to know those things because there is a healthy way to keep your body moving during this time. But I guess there's a balance there. But for people who can't get to the gym, there's a lot of gyms that are closed, right? Like that's a huge thing. How are they supposed to keep up a routine or get creative? Because I'm assuming you did that. And even people had a hard time, by the way, buying weights. Like weights are sold out.
Yes, totally. Equipment is not to be found anywhere. I mean, I have a couple of weights at home, but I mostly focused on doing body weight stuff, doing what's called unilateral movements, where it's like one arm or one leg at a time, so they can be a little bit heavier. So I don't have to do like lots and lots and lots of reps to get something out of it. I can do just like a few hard reps and get some strength training out of that.
So is this the time, would you recommend people like going on programs or like going to like trainers and stuff, like coaches? Because I have a couple friends who have signed up to do like some intimate like coaching sessions with like a trainer.
Yes.
And, you know, I think a lot of people are kind of thinking about that being like, why not?
Right. I think I've known a lot of people have gotten something out of, there's lots of like Instagram live classes out there right now, or like YouTube workouts you can follow along to. And I think people get a lot out of having somebody who is present to hold them accountable or motivate them. So if that's your thing, there's sort of like a real cottage industry that sprung up around that. If you look for it, it's totally out there. That's not my vibe, but I think that if you know that to be something that works for you and you don't think it'll become like another stressor for you, it's something that is worth trying and it's like an increasingly available service for people.
So what keeps you motivated?
My usual answer to this and what I find what works for me is that focusing on feeling motivated to work out is a sort of false errand to send yourself on. And working out is really more about making a commitment and getting done what you can do for the day. Every day doesn't have to be your best day. It doesn't have to be your longest day. You're just kind of, it's in the way you show up to your job and the way that you try to make most of your meals healthy. You put in the time to work out. Like, you know, it's only a few times a week and it's for not that long. So I have a few tricks that I use to kind of get myself going when I don't
please
feel
share.
Like it.
Yes,
so tricks like, you know, I put my workout stuff on very sort of slowly, or like I put it on earlier in the day. So then when it comes time to go to the gym, I don't have to like get all my preparation done and then also go.
Right.
Or I tell myself, I feel terrible. I'll go to the gym. I'll do like one movement. I'll like do my squats. And if I feel like still feel terrible, I still feel really like not like being there, I'll go home.
Awesome. Well, Casey Johnson, thanks again for being here. And yeah, we hope you have a great continued quarantine or just stay safe in Brooklyn. You know, there's lots going on still there.
Yeah, you too. Stay safe.
Again, Casey is a writer for Vice and known as the Swole Woman on Instagram. Definitely check her out. Now, coming up next, we break down the far-right group, the Proud Boys. Who are they? What's their story? That's next in 2 minutes. We've heard the soundbite over and over again from Tuesday's presidential debate, Trump not condemning white supremacy and instead giving a shout-out to the Proud Boys.
Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you prepared
I'm willing
to specifically
do, that, but
do it?
Well, I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
Proud Boys.
White supremacists and right
Proud Boys.
stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what, somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because
now, started by a co-founder of Vice magazine, the Proud Boys describe themselves as a Western chauvinist men's club that believe in ending welfare, closing borders, and adhering to traditional gender roles. So why would Trump reference them, even though he has since said, by the way, he doesn't know who they are? Well, back with us is Brian Dunning, host of the Skeptoid podcast. Thanks again for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I give a little bit of a background here, and I was surprised that it was from the co-founder of Vice magazine. Yikes. How did this group start, and what do they represent today?
So if I can give a little bit of a long answer to that, to understand the Proud Boys, who and why they exist, you have to understand sort of Trump populism. You know, we start with recognize that traditional political groups like Democrats and Republicans, they share this core principle of trying to make our lives better, trying to make the country better. Obviously, they disagree on how to do that, but they share that same core principle. Now, populists, particularly Trump populists, are the group who's completely abandoned those principles. So, and if I can give an example, one conservative value that we hear about a lot is personal accountability, right? Personal responsibility. So populism follows the opposite of that, which is blaming everyone else for all of your problems. You're fighting back against everyone else. And this is why Trump is always all about blaming other groups, the Mexicans, the Chinese, the Democrats, whoever it is. He unifies the populist base by validating their desire to have other people punished for whatever it is that they're dissatisfied about in their own lives. So given this climate, it's kind of inevitable that a group like the Proud Boys would have arisen. You know, now that they're given license from on high to literally to fight back.
All right. Brian Dunning again joins us, host of the Skeptoid podcast, as we talk about the background behind the Proud Boys. So why would Trump mention them on stage, stand back and stand by? And are they linked to white supremacy?
Yeah, I mean, they don't like to openly identify as racist or bigot or sexist or all of these things that they clearly are associated with. So instead, they use that term that you mentioned, this kind of strange term, Western chauvinist, whatever the heck that is, defending Western male values. I guess they feel that sounds warmer and fuzzier
patriarchy
than yeah, yeah. It sounds better than white nationalists.
Yeah.
Clearly
that makes
well, it's all in the branding, right? This, it really reminds me of, like, if you watch Mrs. America, Phyllis Schlafly, she was okay with kind of working with people who had ties with, like, the KKK if they just didn't blatantly say that they were a part of the KKK, right? It's all this marketing. Is that something that we're seeing kind of Donald Trump also do, like taking advantage of the somewhat unfortunate power that these groups have?
I think you hit the nail exactly on the head. Yeah. By branding it with this, you know, this less offensive or just at least vague term, nobody can complain, hey, they just advocated racism. They didn't. We advocated Western chauvinism, whatever that is. But clearly the people who are all part of these movements and part of these groups, they know exactly what they're about. And they're not put off by that branding at all.
Yeah. And Brian, what do you think about the fact that Huffington Post, I guess, got these notes or something from this group that did say that they wanted to create war and get attention and describe something like a bloodbath? Like, I feel like that's very worrisome. And when you see something like that being revealed, you would say that's a threat. That is a terrorist organization.
Clearly. I'm going to hope that we've got a small number of very vocal people, even within the Proud Boys, from whom that kind of rhetoric is coming, and that the majority of them are, I hate to say ordinary Americans, because that's not even close to true. But I like to think that most of the Proud Boys are like most people in general, and that they're not actually going to go out and do violence. We can all hold extremist views, but we can also govern them to some degree.
For the sake of it being, Brian, for us to kind of obviously, Antifa is something that Trump has talked about. I feel like we've kind of debunked it with you. But when it comes into being conflated with Proud Boys, can you tell us the stark differences of like what we should be looking at when it comes to obviously what people are saying Antifa is versus what people are saying and what we're discussing about Proud Boy? I think that kind of differencing and that connection and difference needs to be put out there.
So in my experience, the ability to actually go out into the world and commit violence is a special kind of crazy. There's something going on in your brain. And I don't think it makes much difference whether you're identifying as Antifa or a Proud Boy. Mm. There's something wrong with you if you're going out and doing those things. And those people do not represent the vast majority of the protesters. Certainly the Black Lives Matter protest has nothing at all to do with going out and doing violence. So I think that to the degree that there are Antifa people who identify as that, going out and breaking windows and doing violence, that's no different from groups that associate more with the Proud Boys or with populism. They are real, they are out there, but I don't think you want to blame any larger movement on either side for those kind of actions.
All right. Well, Brian Denning, thanks again for joining us. Brian is the host of the Skeptoid podcast. Check it out. It's a great podcast. Thanks. Wrapping up the show as we always do with our Yes Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And we've got plural. We've got queens today. Ooh. Let's start with this one. Yes. Joshua Schaefer lives in Chicago, but he often goes up to Milwaukee, and he's gone there so much he has become a recognizable figure in the city. That's because he dresses up like Mario. He drives a go-kart like Mario. He blasts the Mario theme song, and he's known as Milwaukee Mario.
Thank you. Oh, hey. I'm just trying to spread joy, make people happy. Thank you so much. Like, the city just named me Milwaukee Mario here, so I just accepted it. So at this building right here, a guy was throwing banana peels from the balcony at me. It was so funny, trying to make me spin out. That's how I drift the Mario Kart. With the pandemic going on, people, they aren't having fun like they used to. So to see me riding around, that instantly brings joy.
Now, I think this is just hilarious. And actually, I used to do these video game highlights for GameStop stores. I was like the host. And I got called out because I called it Mario instead of Mario.
Well, yeah. I would have called you out as well. That means you are unqualified.
Well, yes. So I just think this is so much fun. It brings a smile to people's faces. And who doesn't love a little Mario?
I mean, I love Mario. It kind of reminds me of those videos from like a couple or 3 or 4 years ago where people would do the street racing and they were all dressed up kind of like the Mario Kart game. Oh. And like they were literally on go-karts, literally riding around as characters from the game. And I think that is so cute. I love that he's doing this in a safe way, by the way, because he's wearing a mask while he's going through the town. So yeah, this is really, really cute. Shout out to Milwaukee.
Yes, because, you know, it's like those people that give hugs out, but obviously we can't hug each other. So this is a creative way to do it.
I don't like that.
Smile to people's faces. What? You don't like the hugs, the free hugs?
I don't like that at all.
You never did. You're one of those people. But like, I imagine dating this guy and then being like, oh, yeah, what does he have to? Oh, he's really busy. He goes into Milwaukee as Mario. It's like his service to the world.
He seems like a sweet guy, but not a guy that I want to date.
Yes.
No shade. Well, anyway, you're already in a relationship.
Speaking of dating.
So you can't.
Okay, fair enough. There's an Asian short-clawed otter named Harris, and he's single after his partner of 4 years, Apricot, recently passed away, okay? So his keepers decided to do something creative to find him a new partner. They set him up on Fishing for Love, a website created just for him. And they basically put out the word that this otter is looking for love. If only we all had that support and someone who would put out that work for us when we're looking for love. And so actually someone reached back out. They found a female otter called Pumpkin, who was also looking for love at a Scarborough Sea Life after recently losing her partner, Eric. And so supposedly they're going to go on their first date and everything. But this is what I love about the story too, besides how great out there it is. They actually introduce a new male into a female's territory when they're otters so that the male more easily submits to the female on first meeting. And that's what I'm talking about. The men that submit to the women. Go otters.
If this otter gets more play than I have ever and it actually gets in a relationship, I'm literally going to jump.
Maybe this is what we need to do for you. Put a fishing for love.
No, I don't want that type of mess in my life.
That does it for Yas Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
And coming up on tomorrow's show, after Chrissy Teigen opened up on social media about her tragic loss, it's just so horrible, we're discussing miscarriages and the grief associated with it. 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, live right here on Channel Q. And of course, we post everything as a podcast. So you can find our podcast on the radio.com app. Just search Let's Go There. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
See you tomorrow. Have a great night.
Bye, y'all.